From the Southeast Asian capital city of the Philippines, Manila, I bid you all Merry Christmas. It is indeed Christmas here, ladies and gentlemen. As a matter of fact, it's a little after 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Christmas Day. And I know for the great majority of you, it is yet Christmas Eve. So, Merry Christmas from the other side of the world, very near the equator. I'm Art Bell, and this is the largest program of its sort in the entire world called Coast to Coast AM, literally coast to coast and shoreline to shoreline all around the world. Well, Pope Benedict celebrated Christmas, midnight mass, in the splendor of St. Peter's Basilica early Monday with an appeal for abused children around the world, including child soldiers, beggars, and others deprived of sustenance and love. My God, there are many of those right here in this country. The Child of Bethlehem directs our gaze toward all children who suffer and are abused in the world, the born and, of course, the unborn, according to Benedict, referring naturally to the Church's stand against abortion. And you just cannot have a Christmas without this, can you? One dead in shooting at crowded Florida mall. A gunman fatally shot a man in a fight at a crowded mall on Sunday, then sent hundreds of Christmas shoppers running for cover as he fired at police chasing him. SWAT team members, police chasing him, then arresting him after he had barricaded himself in a department store at the Boynton Beach Mall north of Miami. Can't have a Christmas without that, can you? Baghdad, that not good news either. Some 12,000 Iraqi policemen have been killed. 12,000 Iraqi policemen since the ouster of Saddam Hussein. My God, 12,000 police. According to the country's interior minister, clashes, suicide bombers, weekend explosions killed more than a dozen Iraqi officers and six American soldiers at a news conference in Baghdad's heavily fortified green zone. The interior minister said, despite the thousands of police deaths, surprisingly, I would add, when we call for new recruits, they come by the hundreds and by the thousands. Must be good pay, benefits or something. The FBI failed to fully investigate information suggesting other suspects may have helped Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols with a 1995 Oklahoma City bombing, allowing questions to linger more than a decade after the deadly attack. That's a congressional inquiry that says that. No surprise there. Questions will linger decades, even centuries, I suspect, after 9/11. Ethiopia declares war on Somali militias. Wow. Ethiopia sent fighter jets into Somalia and bombed several towns Sunday in a dramatic attack on Somalia's powerful Islamic movement, and Ethiopia's prime minister said his country had been forced to enter a war. It was the first time Ethiopia acknowledged its troops were in fact fighting in support of Somalia's UN-backed interim government, even though witnesses had been reporting their presence for weeks in an escalating battle that threatens to engulf the Horn of Africa. I wonder, somehow I have a feeling we're behind that someplace or another. Hundreds of flights left Denver's beleaguered airport finally on Christmas Eve with many passengers who had been stranded when a two-day blizzard shut the whole thing down. The airport's two biggest airlines, United and Frontier, said they flew full schedules of a combined 1,200 flights on Sunday. They had a similar schedule Saturday as travelers around the country, whose itineraries were totally wrecked by the storm, raced to get home. That Italian, the one who met with the ex-KGB agent the day the Russian fell fatally ill from a radiation poisoning event, was apparently arrested on Sunday. The man's father said the accusations against this man and international arms trafficking and slander type accusations were not believed to be directly related to the investigation of the death of the Russian. Well, look at this. Arnold Schwarzenegger, California governor, was recuperating Sunday in Sun Valley, Idaho, just one day after he broke his leg while skiing there. 59 years of age now, he was, quote, continuing to do well today, looking forward to spending time with his family. James Brown is in the hospital with pneumonia. Brown is 73 years old now. And though I'm away from it, I'm following it. The New England Patriots can begin thinking about, would it really happen a fourth time? A fourth Super Bowl in 6 years? After clinching the AFC East on Sunday, Seattle also got into the playoffs, securing the NFC West. All right, well, we've been reporting for some time on global warming and on the fact that sea levels would rise, correct? Rising seas caused by global warming have now, for the first time, washed an inhabited island right off the face of the earth. The obliteration of Lokhara Island in India's part of the Sundarbans, where the Ganges empty into the Bay of Bengal, marks the moment when one of the most apocalyptic predictions of environmentalists and climate scientists has now become true. As the seas continue to swell, they're going to swallow entire island nations, from the Maldives to the Marshall Islands. It would be inundated. Thank you. Vast areas of countries from Bangladesh to Egypt and submerged parts of scores of coastal cities 8 years ago, as exclusively reported in The Independent. This is where this comes from, by the way, The Independent on Sunday. The first uninhabited islands in the Pacific Atoll vanished beneath the waves. The people of low-lying islands in Vanuatu, also in the Pacific, have been evacuated as a precaution, but the land still juts just above the sea. The disappearance of Lokhara, once home to 10,000 people, is unprecedented. So, an island where 10,000 people lived is now gone. It has been officially recorded in a six-year study by researchers at Calcutta's University. So remote is the island that the researchers first learned of its submergence and that of an uninhabited neighboring island when they saw they had simply vanished from satellite pictures. You know, they were looking at recent satellite pictures, and they went, hey, where did that go? Two-thirds of nearby populated island has also been permanently inundated. Dr. Sugata Hazara, director of the university's School of Oceanographic Studies, says, quote, it's only a matter of some years before it's swallowed up as well. Dr. Hazara says there are now a dozen vanishing islands in India's part of the delta. The area's 400 tigers are also in grave danger there. So even inhabited islands have now begun to disappear, ladies and gentlemen. That's a fairly serious matter. We'll continue with all of this cheery Christmas news in a moment. Santa Claus has already visited this part of the world. He has already satisfied the children on this side of the world. But NORAD is currently tracking and hopefully will not get a trigger finger with regard to Santa. I mean, after 9/11, they're watching everything very carefully, and he is like an unidentified object. But they apparently have him in their sights. When we last heard, he was seen somewhere over the St. Louis, Missouri area, and we'll try and keep you informed as the evening progresses, but be assured, trigger finger or not, I'm sure NORAD will leave him alone, and he will deliver as he should to each and every child in the world. The act of mutilating cattle, that's quite a segue, right? The act of mutilating cattle and other animals has always been explained as an act of predators and satanic cultists. However, listen carefully, there has not ever been one person that has been convicted of mutilating a cow. Not one in all the world in all the time. In many cases, farmers remain baffled. In other cases, it is easy to deal the alien card when explaining why these animals are left to die horrible deaths. What if the aliens and some paramilitary group were in on the mutilations? Why would they work together? Well, here's one theory based on some facts. When one writes about cattle mutilations, it is always difficult to piece together any solid explanation for such a horrible act. There have been many theories as to why cattle mutilations, or mutes, if you will, occur at all. The ideas range from predators to satanic cults, and there is, of course, the extraterrestrial theory that creeps into conversation. While the ET explanation is considered bizarre, well, so are the facts that surround these occurrences. It is estimated, listen carefully, please, that the mutilation rate of cattle has increased to about 12,000 bovine a year. My God, 12,000 bovine a year, and not one person in all the history of watching this has ever been arrested. How could that possibly be? Each of these cows have been cut with surgical precision. There are no teeth marks on the animal, no predatory tracks. The animal parts are usually taken the same in every case. The parts are not taken. They're not favorites with predators, by the way. The left ear is usually taken. The absence of blood in the carcass would mean that whatever it is it attacks has some way to get all the blood out of the animal in question. If predatory animals can uniformly select body parts, mainly the ones used in reproduction and excretion, and then remove all the blood from the carcass, leaving the remaining good meat to rot, what we're seeing is a very meticulous animal doing the killings. Remember, surgical precision. Investigators like our own Linda Moulton Howe have determined that perhaps extraterrestrials are responsible for such attacks. However, it's not just Howe who's considered this. It's the farmers themselves who have claimed that they've seen UFOs in the area prior to and after mutilations have taken place. Why would farmers ever make such an outrageous claim? So, what do you think? Now, sit there and give it a little bit of thought. 12,000 cows. 12,000 cows every year. At least that's what we're up to right now. Not one human, not one predator has ever been caught. All of this done with surgical precision. Can you account for that? By the way, we're going to go to open lines for the balance of this hour. David Sirita is going to be with us next hour. So if you know the numbers, the portholes to approach us with, you might go ahead and dial, and we'll get to you in just a moment. UFO hacker Gary McKinnon's last chance of avoiding extradition to the U.S. for a trial that, well, could lead to 70 years in prison or perhaps even an indefinite term down at Guantanamo takes place on February 13th, when his case will be decided by London's Court of Appeal. Since his crime took place on UK soil, he wants to be tried there in the UK and is appealing his extradition to the US. McKinnon's hacking of NASA computers was accomplished by simply finding systems that had blank passwords and then opening them. He did no damage and reported that some NASA files made reference to an apparently extensive secret US manned presence in space. God, wouldn't you love to get your hands on those? While he's apt to get a fair trial in the UK, there is every likelihood that in the US he'll be treated as a terrorist. Not good. And would, of course, disappear right into the night and the fog of American justice. If he's tried, conviction will be virtually automatic, sentencing brutal. Ken Lewis writes in the New Zealand News that site Mnet, the McKinnon, who broke into U.S. computers and found evidence of aliens and UFO technology, faces up to 70 years in a U.S. prison. That's a lot of time, folks. A lot of time to go to prison. And as I have said, as we have followed this case, that came from unknowncountry.com. Wouldn't you love to lay your hands on those documents? I mean, documents that purport to show a gigantic, secret, unknown U.S. presence in space, maybe even on the moon. Who knows? Secrets. All right, let's go to the phones. It is Christmas, and or where you are, perhaps Christmas Eve. So here we go. West of the Rockies, it's Ed in San Francisco. Hi, Ed.
Hey, how are you doing? And blessings to you, Art, and to your wife, and to your brand-new baby girl that's on the horizon.
Well, that's not a sure thing yet. It could be a boy. Could be a boy too.
Okay.
But everybody seems to think it's going to be a girl.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very, very beautiful girl. It's interesting. Before I give you this information, in regards to the documents that you were talking about, in regards to the United States and mankind being in space and on the moon.
Yes.
In 1978. I had a vivid vision that the United States had a major base on the moon. I could see the Quonset huts. I could see vehicles that they were using to build. And I saw these very, very young PhD college students that were being brought to the moon on that ship that they used to call Aurora. And I'm telling you that they have been there for a long period of time. But the reason why I called you tonight, I have a statement of hope in all this darkness that is on the planet on this Christmas Eve. This morning, Art, I had a major vision, and in it, it was a spiritual vision, and in it, the vision asked that humanity as a whole, for the next 72 hours from Christmas Day, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, pray for divine peace and divine love and divine salvation on the planet. And I saw millions of people on their knees in the streets all over the planet in prayer, and they were looking up towards the sky, and there were beautiful apparitions that were created for the healing of mankind, and I think something wonderful is about to occur. And I wanted to tell you and your listeners tonight first.
Well, buddy, I sure hope you're right.
And Art, I use Ed because it's part of my last name, but this is Suleiman, the world event psychic, and blessings to you and your family, and may you always be safe, and let all your listeners pray for this peace in the next 72 hours because we surely need it. And God bless you, Art.
Take care, my friend. Well, maybe it will come true. Who knows? Who knows? There could be. That's really kind of what we're going to be talking about when we get our guest here, a kind of a singularity that would occur, a sort of a moment of epiphany. When we realize that what we are doing and what we're doing to our planet may be the wrong direction. And who knows? Roger in Nebraska, maybe he knows. Hi, Roger.
Hello, Art. Good to talk to you. I'm a truck driver out here on Interstate 80. Listen to you every night.
All right.
Hey, Merry Christmas.
How's the road out there? I hear the northern part of the U.S. is pretty well socked in and cold and snowy.
Well, anything west of Ogallala, Nebraska, out there North Platte, pretty much got snowed in. I'm over here by about Lincoln, Nebraska. All they got here was a little bit of rain and freezing rain, but we're doing okay here.
All right.
Roads are dry. Hey, listen, the reason why I called is because I wanted to know if you'd heard the story that was going around. Me and a buddy of mine, he's a truck driver also, we were having coffee one night in a truck stop. And I wanted to know if you heard the story about, let me say this. Have you ever heard of, I'm sure you have, but have you ever heard of designer babies?
Oh, yes, of course.
Okay, where, you know, you change the DNA and you make them whatever you want, or you know what I mean, blue eyes, blonde hair, whatever.
We're not quite there yet, but we're getting there.
There are some couples in our country, as a matter of fact, that were born with dwarfism disease, and there were some couples that are, you know, they're born deaf, and they've always been deaf from birth, you know. Well, when they're paying geneticists or looking into paying geneticists money to deliberately alter the baby's DNA so when the baby is born, it will be deaf or it will have dwarfism disease, the same as the parents.
Oh, my God.
Have you heard that?
No, I haven't heard a word about that. I'm very, very well aware, of course, that designer babies are on the horizon. They're certainly not on my horizon, but they're on our horizon. And I suppose pretty soon you'll be able to go into an office and there'll be a little checklist for color of eyes, color of hair. How tall would you like your baby ultimately to be? And all other kinds of attributes. And you'll just sort of go down, you know, the way you go to a doctor's office and you go down your health checklist. You'll just go down and, well, honey, what do we want? Blue eyes? Mm-hmm. Okay. Blonde hair? Sure. Why not? From Manila in the Philippines, I'm Art Bell. And this is Coast to Coast AM. All right. Everybody listen to me very closely. This is very, very important. As we do every year, next week, we're going to start taking predictions for the year 2007. At the same time, we will review those psychic predictions made by all of you, not professional psychics. We'll have enough of those on the air at the beginning of the year. This is an annual event. And I don't take it lightly, and I don't want you to take it lightly. I want you to go into the psychic self that you have and really think about this. There's, you know, no picking up the phone and just saying, oh, you know, yeah, I want to get on the air. I want you to think very, very hard about a major event that you think will occur in the year 2007. So next week when we begin, no just grabbing the phone and making an off-the-cuff prediction just to get on the air. Think it over. I want you to think very carefully. Perhaps it will be derived from a dream that you have between now and then. Perhaps it will simply come to you in a conscious moment from your inner psychic self. However it comes, I definitely want it. And I want 2007 to be the most psychic, insightful year we've had to date, and there have been many, many years that we've been doing this. So, coming up next week, prepare yourself. All right, as promised, back to the lines. Next half hour will be solid open lines, and then David Sirita is going to be here. And we will continue with the alien agenda. David's right, of course, in the middle of that. West of the Rockies, let's see, it would be David in Mesa, Arizona.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
First, I want to wish you and yours the very merriest of Christmases and a Happy New Year. And congratulations on your baby about to be.
Thank you.
Then I want to tell you I spent 30 years in the United States Air Force, two tours at Clark, and I listen to you regularly. And I think if you want to see something amazing, you need to go from Manila out to the area of Clark Air Base, which the bus takes you through the jungle. And 500 feet off of the roadway is a native village. And Baguio in the South China Seas are wonderful, too.
Been there, done that.
Oh, it's just...
I was also stationed at Clark, sir, when I was...
No kidding!
In the Air Force. Oh, yeah.
I was there for the first time from 73 through 75, and then from 78 to 81.
Did you ever go out and take a look at... I recall, for example... the Negrito Indians, they're able to take a poison dart, put it in a blowgun, and they'll point out a tree that you can barely see it so far away, and they can put that dart square in the middle of a tree.
Absolutely. Do you know that the Negrito people took a mountain Japanese thing that we could not get up to and wiped them out overnight so that we could get to the top of the mountains? And Queen Mary was still alive at 106 and had privileges at our hospital, and I used to go pick her up and take her to the hospital.
Well, I hate to say it, sir, but a lot of Americans are not aware of the dual role that U.S. soldiers and Philippine soldiers played in the fights, multiple fights for the Philippine Islands. And as a result of those battles, Americans and Filipinos have always been very, very, very close. And because of that, the Philippine Islands has English its second language. So most Filipinos speak quite a bit of English. Contrary to what you might think and what a lot of Americans think, everything here is written in English. Literally everything. It doesn't matter where you go, road signs, stores, publications, it's all written in English. So Americans who come to the Philippines do not have a difficult time. It's the single nation here in Southeast Asia, or in Asia, if you will, that in which everything is virtually written in English. And English is particularly a spoken language here in the Philippines. All right, let's go to the wild card line. It's Mike in West Palm Beach, Florida. Hi, Mike.
How you doing there? The topic I like to talk about is controlling hurricanes. I understand you had a lot of problems with these typhoons recently in the Philippines. I live in Florida, and as you know, this year we escaped it. There have been no problems with hurricanes.
You escaped it, but they all came this way, my friend. They all came roaring across the Philippines.
It could have been done deliberately, too. Let me explain. This year, there was no problems here in Florida or the Gulf Coast. These hurricanes that should have hit us, which the weather people were predicting, of course, were turned away or totally disintegrated. Let me tell you how I got interested in this.
Okay.
In the middle of July, there was a hurricane called Chris. It was heading for South Florida, 80-mile-an-hour winds. It was headed right for Miami. All of a sudden, it disappeared with the radar screen.
Mm-hmm.
The weather people started coming up with excuses. One excuse was the winds were blowing in the wrong direction. However, before, while the hurricane was active, they didn't mention about winds. I was thinking about what happened with this, and I did some research. The October 2004 edition of Scientific American, which is found in any American public library, has an article entitled Controlling Hurricanes by a Dr. Hoffman, who's a NASA scientist. In this article, he gives three ways of controlling hurricanes. One of them was the use of a space satellite beaming down microwave radiation from space. He actually has a diagram of this in Scientific American. This satellite is capable of disintegrating a hurricane. This is what I think happened to Hurricane Chris, that disappeared within a few hours and never seen again. Then we had another hurricane came along, Ernesto, in September. Now, again, the experts were saying the Gulf Coast was going to be hit, Florida is going to be hit. What happened with Ernesto? Okay, it was heading for the Gulf Coast and the oil installations. All of a sudden, it makes a turn north and goes into Cuba. Stays in Cuba for about 3 days, demolishes the economy there, then heads for Florida. When it gets to Florida, it's nothing more than a minor thunderstorm. I was here. It barely rained with a hurricane sitting above us. Then it leaves Florida, goes into the Atlantic Ocean, picks up speed because of the warm waters of the Atlantic, goes up the East Coast and ravages most of the East Coast. And I'm thinking about who is responsible for controlling these things. And I came up with three different groups. One, the insurance companies, who are charging astronomical amount of premiums for their insurance, ripping off the people here in Florida. They didn't have to pay out one penny in damages.
Well, I don't know about ripping off. That might be a little unfair. I mean, the insurance companies, listen, the insurance companies took such... Hold on, sir. Hold on, please. The insurance companies took such big hits in the last few years that some of them went belly up. So take it easy on them. Hello?
It's in the tens of billions. You hear me?
I hear you. I just asked you to just pause. Take a breath.
Okay.
The insurance companies, some of them went belly up. They took such big hits. So that they would have an interest in controlling the weather, I don't doubt for a second.
Okay. Second group would be the oil companies. Why? They couldn't get another Katrina hit in the Gulf Coast with the oil installations. They had
That's
to protect
true.
The oil installations at any
That's
cost.
That's true. Yeah.
Third group, which is my theory, I'm Jewish myself. The Israeli government might have been involved in this. In the middle of July, Israel is fighting for its life in Lebanon, as we know. Big war going on. It was costing billions of dollars a day. Where does Israel get its money from? From the Jewish communities here in Florida and New York. If a hurricane would hit South Florida, the Jewish community here would not give money to Israel. I'm convinced they had some involvement with this.
All right. Well, I'm going to hold it right there. Listen, that would be my last choice. Your first choice would be my first choice. Actually, the first one you presented. I would think the insurance companies would have a very, very deep interest in controlling the weather and diverting hurricanes if they could do it. But I think you gave them a pretty bad rap. I mean, the insurance companies paid out dearly from the previous year. So dearly that a lot of them don't exist any longer. So is somebody controlling the weather? Well, it's possible. It's possible. They sure didn't control what happened here, or did they? I don't know. Is weather control possible? I suspect it might be. Was it controlled this year? I have no way of knowing, and nor does that gentleman really. I suppose it could be. I suppose it could be, but that would mean it's an awfully new technology, because the previous year, we got clobbered in the U.S. We got absolutely clobbered, so it would have to be an awfully new technology. Let's go to Ithaca, New York, even though it sounded like we were just in New York. And Mike, you're on the air, Mike.
Hi, Art. How you doing?
Just fine.
I'd like to shed some light for you on two things that I think might be of very topical on coast these days. One is the mutilations. They look very much like the kind of damage done to animals by an animal known as the thylacine, or Tasmanian wolf or Tasmanian tiger, which Peter Putkammer talked with you about back in 2002. And there's a new book called Magnificent Survivors that says they're not extinct in Tasmania. There's still some there. There are also some in Aryan Jaya. And both recent as well as long ago observations, when they kill a mammal, they make very clean incisions. And they eat just those parts, the nasal area and the groin, and they pretty much leave everything alone, and they make a very clean cut. Now, I'm not saying they're thylacines in America, but there were marsupials here in prehistoric times.
Yeah, prehistoric times. But we're talking about 12,000 mutilations a year, 12,000.
Chupacabra, this might be a marsupial, mightn't it?
Why haven't they been seen? Where are the tracks?
In After Dark, there's a photograph of two chupacabras, two very good ones, in a recent After Dark.
Where are the tracks?
After Dark, I think September, around September or October.
No. I'm talking about around these 11,000 mutilated corpses.
I understand. This is just something I'm throwing out. I'm not discounting the other theories. I'm just putting this in there. I want to go on to something else of even more interest, and this has to do with the autism and bonobos and the connection between the two.
That was one hell of a show yesterday, wasn't it?
Yes, last night. I think he's almost correct, but not quite. He's got 99% correct. And here's what I think's going on. There's a website called Origins of Autism by a chap named Andrew Lehman, L-E-H-M-A-N, maybe two N's. And this is really his theory, not mine. But what he basically says, and I know this much to be very much true, that the basic primate society is matrifocal. That is, they're male-dominated, and the things are inherited by males. The land and the territory and the possessions are inherited by males. So they're matrilineal and male-dominated, and that's called matrifocal. Now, the bonobo is different. It's matrilocal and female-dominated. The males go on the pecking order where the females send them, and when they form pair bonds to raise offspring that they produce, the couple go in as egalitarian members of the couple. And the bonobo is actually genetically closer to the human than the regular chimp is. So really, the bonobo and the chimp shouldn't be classified with the chimps on one branch and the humans on the other. The humans and the bonobo share a branch, and then that branch, before they separated from each other, separated from the chimpanzee. So the humans went through a stage of being patrifocal, I mean, like gorillas and baboons and most primates and chimpanzees. And they went through a matrifocal stage. And then what happened is primitive humans were also matrifocal, like bonobos, but when the hunting of big game and mass agriculture and large scale were done, people had to get control of large groups of people in a hurry, and also big architectural projects. So people reverted. You use this term devolution. I don't like it because I don't think evolution progresses things. It just changes them. But we went through a stage where we went back to the patrifocal stage, but not all of us did. There's always been a subsection of the society who are more bonobo-like and chimp-like. They're what are called androgynes or unisex people. These are people who have poorly developed secondary characteristics, so they're perfectly normal in their genitalia. The boys and the girls look a lot alike unless they dress carefully to look differently, and every society has them. And these unisex people are essentially what autistic people are. And when they're functional and they do very well, then they have that what's called Asperger's syndrome, and Newton and Einstein would be examples of these. In fact, most scientists, inventors, dancers, musicians, artists are people with Asperger's syndrome. And most.
All right, we're gonna have to hold it right there. Maybe. That's as good a guess, I guess, as any. However, the numbers are more than frightening. I must admit, I was shocked by yesterday's program, more than shocked. Astounded, saddened, amazed that this could be going on, that the numbers could be astronomically as apocalyptic as they seem to be, and that it has not been major, and I really mean major, news, that autism would have worked its way from, you know, 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 166 births, and there has not been more news of it. And people will write and say, well, yes, this or that scientific journal has covered it. It is indeed a fact, but it should be in mainstream news. It should be New York Times front page news. Now, it has something to do, apparently, with some aspect of modern society, technological modern society. We don't know what aspect. Any guess is as good as any other right now. We damn well better find out. First time caller line, it's Gene in Los Angeles.
Hey, Art, how you doing?
I'm okay.
Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
Hey, you know, I was thinking, you're talking about that guy who wants to be tried in England over those files he downloaded from NASA?
That's right.
You know, I was having some strange dreams about that we already had, like, some bases on Mars. And we're sending out a lot of, like, supplies and stuff, you know, like, constantly. But that's all I had to say on that, you know. But you know,
maybe, anything that says that the U.S. has a gigantic presence in space that's secret is a big story. And if that's really what he uncovered, then I think we have a right to know about it.
It's probably the whole world, really. It's probably... You know, it's probably like a worldwide thing. We just don't. They keep it hidden from us, so we, you know, they keep us. They keep us behind. We're not. You know, the people know that. We're just. What else are we going to do?
I guess.
Yeah, I've been listening to you for a long time. I've been listening to you since you had Roy Masters on. You remember that?
Oh, of course.
It was like 1986 or, yeah, 86.
About that time, yes. Mm-hmm.
And you changed a lot, man. You were like real different back then, and now you seem like you waver, you know, between, I don't know. I still like you, though. I love you, man. You're all right.
I waver between what? Finish it out.
Left and right.
Oh. I absolutely do, and that actually does not represent a change. It really doesn't. I've always been... kind of an independent thinker, and so for any given program I do, I receive a zillion emails saying, oh, you're a conservative lapdog, or you're a leftist communist, and so I get both. I guess that's a good thing. I really am an independent thinker, so on any given subject, I could go one way or the other. I don't follow anybody's political line other than my own. We have very, very little time between now and the top of the hour. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Well, you would have been on the air. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Brian.
Yes. Art, I have some really bad news for you.
Okay.
Apparently, a CIA Predator drone has shot down Santa Claus and his reindeers.
Oh, it has not.
Well, some Eskimos, according to this story I'm reading, some Eskimos.
No, you're out of here. You don't tell kids that kind of thing. CIA has not shut down Santa Claus. What a terrible thing to call up and say on Christmas Eve. Absolutely an awful thing to say, and it's not true anyway. Because we know that NORAD has sighted Santa Claus somewhere in the Midwest. I think St. Louis area, something like that. So Santa Claus is doing just fine. CIA, leave Santa alone. Kids, don't worry about it. I'm Art Bell from Manila in the Philippines, where it's in the mid-80s, maybe high 80s. I'm Art Bell.